Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, as he has so many times before, is one of my favorite people in the whole world, Blair Horner, the Executive Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. These are what we call the white hats or the good guys. And Blair just has a phenomenal understanding of the way government works or doesn't. Welcome back, Blair Horner.
You know, my cheeks are blushing.
And well, they should. Let's talk to you about ethics reform. Is there such a thing? Are we ever going to see it? You know, they had their chance this year. Everybody talked about, oh, well, we'll cut off their pensions if they get convicted of thievery. Right. Or we'll say that maybe there'll be some term limits or maybe this or that. And nothing. They set up just another phony thing. What's in that phony thing?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, here's a year when it's sort of mind-blowing when you think about the heads of both houses of the Senate and the Assembly are convicted of corruption, are sentenced to prison, and Albany's response to do nothing. The bill, so-called ethics bill, has sort of two major components to it. One is an issue that has been, you know, debated nationally. It's about how do you ensure that independent expenditure campaigns, and so your listeners know that's when interest groups spend money on behalf of candidates, but they're not supposed to coordinate it.
You're so right. You're not supposed to coordinate.
That's right. And so the bill tries to define what coordination is and how do you know if an independent expenditure effort is really independent. So that's one part of it.
And how do they do that?
Well, the proposal has a series of sort of tests where if the funding stream for the independent expenditure effort comes primarily from one entity, and that one entity is also funding a candidate by making big campaign contributions to them, under certain circumstances, that may be considered to be a coordinated effort.
Well, that's interesting.
If the candidate has a family member or a former staffer as the head of the independent expenditure effort, that could be considered a coordinated effort. I mean, so there are certain tests built into the law, which is now a law the governor signed a couple weeks ago, that creates that and has some enhanced disclosures. But it was primarily to deal with a real issue, which is how do you ensure that independent expenditure campaigns are, in fact, independent and not coordinating with the candidates or the political parties that they're in support of? Second half of the bill has never been debated. There was no previous legislation on this topic. There were no hearings. There were no committee votes. There was no meaningful public debate. And that's to create new restrictions on not-for-profits that want to lobby the government.
And boy, are they angry.
Well, they're sort of cowering, I think, more than anything else. The current law basically says that if you're a not-for-profit but not a charity is a form of a not-for-profit where you can get a tax-deductible donation, like I assume WAMC is.
Absolutely.
And don't, by the way, don't forget, everybody, to make a donation.
Wow.
But if you're another kind of not-for-profit where you are operating in a not-for-profit way, but you do not get tax-deductible donations under current law, under current New York State law, those entities have to disclose their donors under certain circumstances, depending how much money they spend on lobbying and the size of the donor. This new proposal lowers those limits so that those not-for-profits, more of them will have to disclose, and more of them will have to disclose more of their donors.
So what is it, a $5,000 threshold? Is that something like that?
The current law is that if you lobby and spend more than $50,000 lobbying government, all donors over $5,000 would be disclosed. Under the new law, if you lobby more than $15,000, all donors over $2,500 would be disclosed. And this is the part where, in our opinion, they messed it up. If a charity gives an in-kind donation to one of these groups, they have to disclose their donors too. And the bill does not really define what an in-kind donation is. You and I may be able to look it up in Webster's and say, oh, we know what an in-kind donation is, but you don't really know until it's actually been approved. And so we believe that it was poorly drafted and on an issue that's very controversial because charities are very highly regulated by the Internal Revenue Service, and they're not allowed to really, that most of the money can't be spent on lobbying. So what's the point of this? What problem is the governor attempting to solve by jamming this legislation in the last night of session in the middle of the night? And we think it was drafted poorly, just generally, but we don't even know what the problem is that he's trying to solve.
Those people who think Cuomo did it to get even with the goo-goo groups or the white hat groups like yours, who have, you know, depend on some big donors. Okay, you know, we know that there are some people who give you $5,000. We're going to make you disclose who all of them are, and that will turn them off.
Well, I mean, again, there's two parts to this. One is the disclosure of the donors. There's actually three parts of it. There's the disclosure of the donors, which allows powerful people to have a sort of a short list of people to call to yell at if they don't like what the group is doing. The second part of it is this sort of restriction on this new sort of disclosure requirement on charities. So hypothetically, for example, if you're a lobbyist for Albany Medical Center, for example, in Albany, New York, and you give advice to a not-for-profit, you could conceivably have to disclose all the donors to Albany Medical Center Hospital. And that could have a chilling effect on their ability to raise money for a new wing, right?
Sure.
It has nothing to do with lobbying. So, again, we don't know what's going to happen because it's not defined. The third thing,
of course...
Well,
the governor couldn't wait to sign this thing, could he?
He's already signed it.
That's what I said.
No,
he couldn't wait to sign.
Well, that's right. The deal was announced at 7 p.m. the last night of session. Hmm. It was passed. The no bill language was available until about 1:30 in the morning. It was passed with a message of necessity by 3. And so,
wait, stop, because there will be people listening to the show who still don't know what a
message
of necessity
was.
You know, obviously, it's in the Constitution. If there's a tidal wave heading towards New York, the governor is entitled, it's an emergency, to do a message of necessity and not do the mandatory 3 days.
That's right, 3 days.
You know, to let the poor schnooks read the bills, but they don't do that. Okay, so it's a message of necessity.
To bang this through.
For nothing. Yeah.
And the third thing that is, again, it's not what everyone's mad at Albany about. Right? What the people are mad at Albany about is corruption mm-hmm. by elected officials. By the way, charities were not involved in any of those cases. Independent expenditures may have been involved to some extent, but certainly nothing central to what was happening. What was happening in the cases with Skelos and Silver, for example, was they were gaming the system using their public office for private gain. What happens about that? Nothing. In both cases, one of the honeypots of money for both of them was a network of real estate developers known as Glenwood Management, which funneled in $10 million in campaign contributions. Was anything done about the limited liability companies that allowed them to pump in all that money? No, nothing. In fact, they just beat on not-for-profits, and hopefully something good will come out of the independent expenditure changes. So it's not on point. It's not what people were mad about. And in this particular case, this aspect of it with the charities is could, in fact, do more harm than good in terms of making it hard for prestigious educational and healthcare institutions to raise money.
Yeah. You know, we can take it here at Public Radio. We don't get that many. We get some over $5,000. But
it might be 2,500 now.
Over 2,500. We get them. But
It won't affect you probably because you don't lobby, right? I mean, so your involvement
in
lobbying.
We're prohibited from lobbying.
Well, there you go. So for the charities that don't do that, there's no harm, no foul here. It's just a lot of these big institutions, the Cornells of the world, the NYU Langones and the city, they are involved in advocacy at the state government level. And it is conceivable under certain circumstances that could trigger disclosure of all their donors, even if it has absolutely nothing to do with lobbying. Just so your listeners know, charities under the federal law can only spend a small fraction of the money they raise on lobbying. They're actually restricted from how much they can spend.
So let me ask you a question, Blair Horner. Why in the world, the legislature is not comprised of a group of organized thieves? You know, there are some very good people in the legislature.
Oh, sure.
We all know it. Why don't they get up on their hind legs and say to their speaker, Boss Hastie, or to the people, Mr. Flanagan in the Senate, and say, well, why don't we do some real ethics reform here? What is it that stops them from doing that?
Well, that's a very good question. I think it's, unlike a lot of other issues, ethics is a broad topic that covers many things and different people see it differently. So in the state Senate, for example, where the Republicans have a razor-thin majority in coalition with some Democrats, many of their members are involved in large law firms and receive money from them. And so they don't want to see restrictions on outside income. On the assembly side, you have less of that. You have some of it, but you have a lot less of it. But
Blair, Congress has set up outside
income restrictions. That's right.
You can only make, what, $15,000 or something 15% like that.
Of the highest paid salary in the congressional branch, which is 27 and change.
Right. But these guys, they are so greedy that they just won't even approach the same kind of level.
Well, I mean, it's to some extent, it's ideological, too. I mean, you know, what happened in the Congress came out of Watergate, which was a major scandal involving the highest levels of government, sort of like what's happened here in Albany. And that's the thing that's sort of mind-blowing to me, and I agree with your point. Why don't they do something about it? I think the reason why this particular bill ended up passing is they wanted to have something that they could call ethics, even though it really doesn't deal with any of the problems that were illuminated in the various court cases that came out of the scores of legislators that have gone off to the pokey. I think that was sort of the underlying political Machiavellian motivation was, how do you cobble together a bill that we can all agree on, even if it doesn't deal with the problem, and then run around and say it enough times that it's ethics so that the public would believe it?
Blair Horner, you keep saying that in case people just are tuning in, of Nyberg. I wanted to ask you about the Preet Bharara situation. Now, Preet Bharara is the fighting U.S. attorney who's probably done more things about ethics in this state than anybody has done, probably in 1,000 years.
And that's so, right, that's right.
And he's been
that's
a great
safe.
Man. Now we have Hillary Clinton in an interview saying it's too early to say whether she's going to reappoint this great man, probably having more to do with the fact that we hear, we don't know if it's true, but we hear the U.S. attorney may be taking a look at the Clinton Foundation. But who knows? And then we hear Chuck Schumer, who is, after all, the guy who put Preet Bharara where he is right now, saying the same thing. It's too early to tell what's going on.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to admit, I mean, in Clinton's case, you know, there's so many different sort of factors in play in terms of her ability to run successfully and win that, you know, may not be. I could understand why it wouldn't be the first among the first things that she'd be thinking about. I was surprised by the Schumer comment. And it could have been he misunderstood the question or he got it out of context or who knows. But the fact that it is widely viewed that Bharara has been extremely successful as a U.S. attorney, not only in dealing with corruption in New York, but also dealing with organized crime, Wall Street corruption, terrorism. I mean, he really has been a very high-profile office. He's taken on a lot of bad people across the board. You would think that there should be a ringing endorsement from somebody in the establishment. The governor wouldn't be one of them because, you know, we all know that Bharara is looking at the executive branch, and so it's understandable why he wouldn't say anything. But I was surprised by Schumer's comments. Now, again, I don't know the context in which it came out. It could be they just made a mistake. And just so your listeners know, it's typically the senior attorney from the state that has a lot of influence in terms of who gets nominated to be the U.S. attorney. Ultimately, it's the president's call through the attorney general. But I was surprised by Schumer's comments, too.
Now, let's stay on Bharara for a little while. All the insiders in Albany, they only care about one thing. Is Preet Bharara going to go around and indict a couple of people? We know that he's looking seriously into the way that the Cuomo people, did business. Perhaps somebody could call it pay to play. And the same thing with the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio. So a lot of people are holding their breath, figuring once the election's over, because Preet may not stay where he is, he's going to want to get all of this stuff wound up. Will there be indictments, perhaps, of the governor and the mayor?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's, of course, no way for us to know. And if we did know, then that would mean somebody had violated the law by telling us. But you're absolutely right. We do know that Bharara is looking at both the executives, powerful executives. He's looking at particular attention, it appears, to be the economic development plans of the governor in Western New York. But we don't know for sure. And all you know are news reports, and even then, you know, sort of suspect because the people who know aren't supposed to be telling anybody.
Well, but Blair, they have a couple of good sources, you know, that the Bharara people have brought in. And some of them very close to the governor, like Todd Howe, his former, you know, so-called brother, and Joe Prococo. Now, Prococo, I have a feeling, this is only my feeling, knows what the deal is. You know, you don't throw in Andrew Cuomo. But Howe, who has a very checkered past, it turns out, may well want to avoid being you know, crucified himself.
Well, you know, I think when you're, again, I all we know is what we've read, right? But when you're staring at time in the pokey.
You bet. Imagine going to prison.
There's nothing quite sobering than that prospect. And while people can cavalierly say, oh, yeah, you know, I would take the bullet for the guy, you know, and all that kind of stuff. This is a lot. It's a lot different when you're facing time.
When you got a mortgage, you got kids.
Yeah, you know, and your life, right? I mean, you know, people don't want to do that if they can avoid it. And my guess is that if there are stories to tell, which again we don't even know, individuals I think would be willing to do anything they could to avoid as much time as possible if they're looking at time in the pokey.
Now, Blair, Donald Trump has been saying over and over again that he can take New York State. The last couple of polls show him losing by an immense 30-point margin. Is he delusional? Is he having some kind of brownies? Or what?
That would have to be a very potent brownie. Well, you know, it's hard to imagine how he takes New York. I mean, the only thing that he has going for him is he's from New York. He has his own network of people that are supportive. He can count on the Carl Paladino wing of the and Mike Long of the Conservative Party wing of the sort of Republican politics in the state. But that doesn't get you to 50%+. And the Republicans have a huge enrollment disadvantage in New York State. So it would have to take really something significant to change the dynamic at the national level in such a way that would impact in New York. I mean, in 84, when Reagan won, Mondale lost every state except for Minnesota. And New York had a lot more Republicans than it does now. And so I think relative to Democrats. So I think it's very hard to imagine that Trump takes New York unless there's, you know, really a meltdown of the Clinton campaign.
Well, he's got to get a lot of credit for having built
the skating rink
and the carousel. Got his name on both of them.
He has his name on a lot of things in New York, so people certainly recognize the name. But a lot of people seem to blow pretty hot and cold on him.
Yeah, that's all true. So now, one of the more interesting things is one of my favorite people in the world, Thomas DiNapoli. I love the guy. He's here all the time. Some people have suggested, some of the guys who like to get in the governor's face have suggested that Tom DiNapoli may want to run against him in a primary. He has been auditing much of the controversial upstate program, including the Buffalo Billions, and the governor doesn't like it at all. Let him have it. Call him names. I love Tom DiNapoli, but doesn't it appear to you that DiNapoli is a man of some courage?
Well, he's doing his job. I mean, we pay to have a comptroller to be the fiscal watchdog, you know, the guy with the green eye shades looking at the books of the state. And so he should certainly be applauded for doing his job. If he thinks that money's not being spent wisely, he should look into it. And certainly given what the U.S. attorney's doing, there's some indication that maybe he should be looking at it. So, I mean, this governor is a sharp elbows political player, and so people typically give him a wide berth. But DiNapoli is doing what he's supposed to do. I mean, if he believes that there's something there that he should be looking at, financial mistakes or worse.
Well, the last thing was really a blast at the governor's people.
Yes.
And when I ask him about it, DiNapoli about it, he says, well, we pay these professional auditors.
That's right.
We set them loose. We don't tell them what to do, and they come up with these conclusions.
That's their job. And that's what's supposed to happen. And too often, that's not the case in Albany. And I think that's the reason why we have so many problems.
Right.
Is you have too many entities, too many watchdogs who are really lapdogs and not free to sort of do what they're supposed to do. So in the case of the comptroller's office, they have two major jobs. One is to make sure that the state's pension fund is run properly, and the other is to make sure that the state taxpayer dollars are being spent wisely. That's their job. That's what they're supposed to do. He's a separately constitutionally created position, and he should be free to do that. And that's that.
So, Blair, NYPIRG, of course, is a New York Public Interest Research Group, which you have brought to such prominence that you're regularly quoted in the New York Times. I'm jealous. And the front page, this and that. But much of the money comes from the kids at the State University, City University, too. And I'm fascinated by the governor's attempt to fix the upstate economy by setting up this plan where you could bring a business in if it was on the SUNY campus or near the SUNY campus and be tax-free for 10 years.
Right.
And I'm wondering about that, you know, as a former SUNY professor for 40 years. I didn't like it because, you know, I think it's sort of cheap. And it's not working. And the thing about DiNapoli and others who are looking at it is it's not working. We're spending millions to advertise the thing and nothing's happening.
Yeah, it's a very small number of jobs have been created so far. And in parts of the state and some of the, just so your listeners know, each of the campuses are supposed to be effectively state-funded economic engines under the governor's plan. And they get money to spend to help incubate businesses on their college campuses. And so it hasn't really generated the jobs that were promised. I think that's, by all accounts, fair. The governor's people would probably say you have to be patient, that these things take time.
Sure. You have to be patient until we're out of office.
And we'll see what happens. I mean, again, it's a lot of money. The advertising for it is a lot of money as well. And there really hasn't been the payoff, at least so far.
So there's another question I wanted to ask you about. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said the other day that he thought that if people didn't know anything, they shouldn't really be allowed to vote. It was an interesting thing, got a lot of comment. I think he'll probably run for the hills now because we haven't seen this kind of thing since we used to have literacy requirements for people who wanted to vote in the South. I think his tongue was in his cheek, and I think he's probably referring to the people who are going to vote for Trump, but who knows? What do you think about these efforts to make it easier, not harder to vote? For example, early voting.
Well, I mean, a lot of these reforms don't necessarily mean higher turnout. Your right to vote is a right. It's not a privilege. It's not something you should have to fight for. You are an American citizen. You have a right to vote. So it seems to me that the public policy of government should be to make you access that right as easily as possible. And so if early voting makes it easier for people to vote, why wouldn't you do it? Whether or not it increases turnout, I think it's always hard to say, because usually the states that have these sort of innovative policies or mail-in voting, for example, Oregon, those are states that have a history of higher voter turnout and other things that they do. And so it's hard to tease one of them out.
But Blair, generally, Democrats are more in favor of these kinds of reforms than Republicans who got there the old-fashioned way.
Well, you know, I mean, I've seen that happen, but I've also seen Democrats be in the lead in terms of trying to block college students from voting if they thought they were going to vote for the Green Party or they were feeling the burn.
Sure.
I mean, you're right. As a party platform, the Democratic Party believes, at least in the Northeast, that higher voter turnouts help them. And there's certainly some evidence of that. When we talked earlier about the state Senate races, generally speaking, the only time in recent years where they've been able to take the state Senate is presidential years, which is the highest voter turnout. But again, it shouldn't be about party. It shouldn't be like the calculation should be some political calculation. It's what makes it easier for people to vote. It's their right to do so. And we live in a technological age where you can go to the other side of the planet, go to a little plastic machine and take out cash from your bank account in America. Why is it so hard to make it for people to make it?
You know why they don't want them to vote.
People don't want both to some extent. Both parties don't want new voters because they don't know how they're going to vote.
Yeah, they got here the old way.
The old voters. They like the old voters better than the new voters. That's why they're in.
I got 1 minute for you that I want to ask you about.
Sure.
And that is lead and other chemicals in the water. This is a state disgrace, probably a national disgrace.
It really is unbelievable. You have plumbing systems that leak lead in the water, and people are doing everything they can to not have to come to grips with it. And good news is the governor advanced legislation with a message of necessity that we talked about before that will require all school districts to test for lead. But New York will be the first state in the country to require regular testing of tap water in schools. That shows you how far behind the country is on this. And it's really a disgrace because lead, we've known for thousands of years, is a public health problem.
I know, because I remember eating some lead chips off the windowsill anyway. And that's been my curse ever since. Blair Horner, we love having you on. Our guest is Blair Horner, Executive Director of NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group. Blair, as always, brilliant. And we thank you so much and invite you back anytime you want to.
Thanks for having me.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.